Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is The Guardian.
Got inflation at 40-year highs. You've got unemployment everywhere at 50-year lows, that sort of thing. There has been so much churn, so much change in the economy. And you go, my God, we have lived through more than interesting times. We've lived through really volatile economic times, and you can see the pressures.
Hello, lovely people of podcasts, and welcome to the show. You are with Catherine Murphy, and I am political editor of Guardian Australia. And with me in the pod cave this week, they've gone quiet. I just thought they were going to go straight.
Sorry.
In.
Well, we've been demure and quiet, as we normally are.
Well, we're amongst royalty. It's Catherine the Great, and we're just her minions.
And we're off the rails already. With me in the pod cave this week is the delightful Shane Wright, who is senior economics thinker, dreamer, and news writer for Nine newspapers.
And according to The Drum, Australia's biggest Kate Bush fan. I need to keep reinforcing that, yes.
Well, I think that's actually probably provable.
It could be correct.
Shane Wright, delightful Shane Wright.
Is anyone fighting for that title, though?
I think a few of us are into Kate Bush, but I think none of us can rival Shane Wright. And equally delightful, Greg Jericho, a Guardian columnist and also works for the progressive think tank, the Australia Institute. And if you guys are regular listeners, you will know that we do try and get together periodically and we have sessions where they go along the following lines. Hi, I'm Catherine Murphy. I haven't had time to keep up with the economy. What's happening? And so we are, in fact, engaged in one of those episodes. I have missed you guys enormously. I had a bit of a break, as regular listeners know, at the start of the year, and this is the first time I've had an opportunity to get the band back together, the Fiscal Drags.
I'm trying to work out, if Jericho, are you the bass player here?
I'm certainly not
the lead.
Yeah, I think I'm the bass player.
Am
I the McCartney of the...
Oh, speaking of which...
You saw him?
Yeah, I saw him. Anyway, if listeners, if you went to the Paul McCartney gigs... Lucky you, because it was pretty good. And I don't know if there's still tickets, but if there are, try and get one.
And regular listeners would know about the love affair of pop culture that is, that is the Fiscal Drags.
The Fiscal Drags, yes. Exactly. We do a little bit of economy and a whole lot of pop culture. Anyway, let's try, folks, and stay on message for a moment. And let's start with the economy. Literally, this is going to be one of those conversations where I say to both of you, been a bit busy. The Voice referendum took a lot of my bandwidth, and there's been other bits and pieces, and I'm preparing to go with the Prime Minister to China this weekend. So seriously, I am out of the loop about the economy. Shane?
You're never out of the loop, Catherine.
No, I am.
Never.
I am.
Never.
What's happening?
What's happening? Inflation's still high. There's a lot of people in work. And there's a lot of people who want to still be in work once the Reserve Bank is finished dealing with inflation. House prices are moving a bit.
Yep.
Although there are all sorts of factors. I think actually the biggest economic issue is actually migration at the moment.
Yes.
It's a huge thing in terms of keeping the economy afloat.
Yes.
Right at the moment, there's the political angle that you can see. There's the importance to it, even to the trade balance at the moment, given that so much of the, I think it's about 500,000 people who've come in, increase in the population, so many of them are international students.
Yes.
And the university sector, of which there are a fair few listeners from universities.
Indeed. Hello to you all.
They would be in, as my father would say, more trouble than Speed Gordon. Now,
and the, oh, my God.
Yeah, okay, that one's...
Yeah, I don't know.
And I'll give you this is the background. So Flash Gordon.
Yes.
Right. Flash Gordon, a comic.
Yes.
Brought into Australia in the 1940s, 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Let's transport ourselves back to Australian vernacular 40s and 50s.
Yeah.
If you called someone Flash...
Oh, yes.
You were... It wasn't a term of endearment.
No, not a compliment.
So they actually had to change the comic in Australia.
My father was brought up
at that time, so he would read it, and it was Speed Gordon. It was not Flash Gordon.
I did not know that.
Wow.
Here you are. See? We've segued, but I think it's an interesting segue into, the fact that Australian vernacular held some resonance in terms of holding back American pop culture.
That is amazing. Flash is a rat with a gold tooth kind of...
No. That's exactly right. And so, that's why more trouble than Speed Gordon rather than more trouble than Flash Gordon.
That's amazing.
You did not know that the segue from the economy would end up with Speed Gordon and Australian vernacular 1950s.
No, I was prepared for Olivia Rodrigo, but no.
That's coming.
We'll get there.
Not Speed Gordon. Okay, so migration, you're right. Yes, big part of the story and big part of the political story looking ahead. Greg, what about your thoughts to supplement the economy? How about it?
I'm going to be optimistic.
What?
Well, wait, for a little. I know.
Catherine, get off the ground.
And a departure from my...
Shane, what just happened?
Oh, my God. Okay.
There's been a tremor in the force.
Inflation high, but falling, and I think actually kind of going under control if you exclude sort of things that are beyond the control of the Reserve Bank. I think doing okay. Unemployment, thankfully, not rising as much as the Reserve Bank would like, and hopefully the Reserve Bank doesn't get its way. And, they say, weren't we good? We succeeded despite our best efforts. GDP and the economy next year not looking good. That is and that goes back to migration. That's pretty much the only thing keeping us afloat, as Shane was saying. Probably despite all my best efforts, interest rates probably going to go up next week. We'll get to that.
Yes, don't preempt our big predictions.
I won't spoil it. look, it's the economy remains a tough thing to gauge because there's a lot going on around the world and we still are not back where we I don't know if we will ever get back to where we were before the pandemic came along. There's still lots of ructions. But all in all, having an unemployment, what is it, 3.7?
3.6.
3.6 now.
Mm. God, is
bloody good.
Yes.
It's not the only story, obviously. You have to think about underemployment. But as a general rule, I always think lower unemployment is better than higher unemployment. And the fact that it's remained around 3.5, 3.6, 3.7, back to 3.6, while inflation has been falling during that time, is a very good thing. And, there are good things there, but all reports are, the Reserve Bank and the government, all their forecasts for next year are not fun.
Yeah.
And if we do start seeing unemployment rise, as the Reserve Bank keeps predicting it's going to, things can turn ugly quickly. It's one of those things where, with the economy, how did it turn bad? Well, it turned bad slowly and then very quickly.
I
want to touch on one thing. Yeah. I was talking to somebody earlier in the week and they said, how things are going? And I said, da, 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 da. And I said, it has not been quiet on the economic front since about 06, 07.
Yeah.
It had, for 15 years, and there's a political element to this. This is like the end of the Great Moderation, which some of our readers will have heard that term before. But you hit the global financial crisis. The global economy has been fluxing ever since. And you get through the GFC, which, remember, for instance, Greece went into a depression for years, that sort of thing. And the Euro trash had huge troubles in that situation.
Yeah.
We get into the early 2010s and there's a step down in inflation. There's a step down in wages. There are huge economic shocks.
Yep.
Boris Johnson, I'm looking at you.
Yes.
Donald Trump, I'm looking at you.
Yes.
Hopefully Xi Jinping comes to power in China, which changes the direction of economic policy.
Yep.
We then have a pandemic.
Yep.
We then have the biggest sort of stimulus coordinated by government and central banks ever.
Yeah.
The inflation that we've been dealing with lately has been a part of that.
Yeah.
And you get to this situation where you've got inflation at 40-year highs, you've got unemployment everywhere at 50-year lows, that sort of thing. There has been so much churn, so much change in the economy. And I think, yeah, it's like it's been going for 15, 16 years.
Yeah, it's getting close to 20 years of interesting times.
Interesting times, exactly.
And you throw in good old climate change into the mix.
Yes.
And it really, I mean, you probably can't draw a direct line, but it was around 2006 that Stern came out with his first thing about how to do climate change.
Yep. And you've had that. You've had the Occupy Wall Street, you've had the Point One, those sort of issues. Like, as someone who's boringly reading a history of the global economy since 1933, right at the moment, these, like, you look at the current patch of time and you go, my God, we have lived through more than interesting times. We've lived through really volatile economic times, and you can see the pressures.
Of course.
It's put on the political class and the and political systems.
Well, what I was going to say is that whole turbulence in the economy is also exhibiting in democracies all around the world in all kinds of ways. And Greg's right to point ahead at what happens, you know, when we're sort of at the point of kind of climate change where we're into sort of serious transition and adaptation territory, and talk about migration. Well, let's not even think about, you know, how interesting that could get.
We had one of the Assistant Reserve Bank Governors, Brad Jones, gave an interesting speech this week talking about the volatility in interest rates, and he touched on, for instance, climate change, digitalisation, AI, these things.
Yes.
That are really going to change the way that we look at things. You're going to China this week. You're going to a country that is depopulating.
Yes.
And we, like, if you look at some of the forecasts, this is a country with, what, 1.4 billion people that by the end of the century could be under 1 billion, could be under 750 million. We have never seen that sort of depopulation in terms of the world's second largest economy. Like, it is mind-boggling what's ahead.
Well, and it's sort of actually, honestly, even though it's really important to people and I want to acknowledge that, it feels banal actually for me to just chuck to the next thought, which is interest rates, because
it's the here and now.
Obviously, please, if you're listening, don't throw your coffee in the river or whatever in fury that I've failed to feel your pain on interest rates. We all feel everybody's pain on interest rates. But yeah, it's just sort of like it seems a minute piece of the puzzle in the context we've just been talking about. But anyway, let's do it, chaps. So next week, the horse race that stops the nation stops it a bit less than it used to, I think. But anyway, setting that to one side, Melbourne Cup Day, rate increase or not? Shane?
The Reserve Bank since 1990 has had a meeting in November on Melbourne Cup Day 33 times. Over this period, since 1990, it's moved interest rates 90 times. On the November meeting...
Well done. Can you do that maths again?
Since 1990, the Reserve Bank has used its meetings on 90 occasions to move the interest rates up or down.
But how many meetings in total?
900 odd. Anyway... Of the 90 times, 13 of those occasions have been in November, on Melbourne Cup Day.
Ah.
It's only it and February are the two most common months that the Reserve Bank moves interest rates.
So what do you reckon? I mean, you've given us the probabilities.
I have given the probabilities,
and obviously, you don't have to make a prediction, love. This is not compulsory, but what do you think?
I think Michelle Bullock will go bang.
Go bang.
She will, and I think... I was actually talking to somebody because for readers of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, you will see a piece at the weekend about this very point.
But, it will be tremendous. Of course it will be tremendous.
There's a mention of the Titanic, in fact, and icebergs.
Of course there is.
But someone pointed out, like, yes, this is going to hurt mortgage holders.
Yep.
And that's part of the point. But they made the point that inflation since the Reserve, since it started lifting, and given the Reserve Bank's forecast, inflation will have increased by 20% between 2021 and 2025, which is what the Reserve Bank thinks is going to happen.
Oof.
And they point out, if you have $100 in the bank, if you had it in 2021, it's now, it will be worth $80.
Yes.
So, yep, it's pain for those who've having to pay more in a mortgage. And so on a $600,000 mortgage, the interest rate increases so far are setting you back $1,400 a month.
Oh,
yes.
Ouch, mm-hmm. Ouch.
But it's also hitting those with money, the value of what you have.
Yes.
Like, I don't want to go all Vima Republic sort of thing.
Well,
like,
well, not so early.
I mean, it's like, a bit early. Let's stick to Zimbabwe and Venezuela.
Yeah, exactly. About 20 minutes in, we can get to Weimar Republic.
That's right.
Yeah, you don't want to go there.
You know what I mean? Even though most people don't quite appreciate it, the value of their savings are being diminished by inflation as well. So Reserve Bank's thinking, right, it's hurting the poor who don't have money because they can't buy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's also hurting other people who have got stuff.
Yes.
The inflation figures that we got the other week, which has changed everyone's thinking, the Reserve Bank actually can't reach, I don't think it can reach its forecasts without at least another interest rate rise.
Okay. Greg?
I think the Reserve Bank will foolishly raise interest rates next week.
Tell us what you really think, Greg.
I think they will do it because they want to look like they are actually doing something, despite the fact that all they're doing is smashing homeowners and making it harder to borrow and slowing an economy that is already slowing because of the things that are raising, going up in prices that really they don't have much of an impact over. And it's basically a bit of a gesture by Michelle Bullock in a sort of second go to show that she's strong and got a steady hand on the till, and she'll get applauded by all the right people who think that she's doing right. And I think it would be a disgraceful move, but what the hell? Yeah, they'll do it anyway because it came out at 1.2% and some economists thought it should be lower than 1.2%. We're talking the inflation in September. And, you know, you look at what was driving that was oil prices. They're not going to be affected by
interest rates. Yeah, you're looking at headline, not underlying, which didn't include
oil. I'm looking
oil.
At the what was driving the thing. It was oil prices. It was the cost of building homes.
Cost of hairdressers.
It was rents. Yeah, but they were a minor sort of impact on the overall.
Not the actual main drivers.
Yeah, I know.
Insurance.
Full disclosure.
It was electricity. It was property rates and charges. These were the main drivers.
You've just listed a large number of things and you're saying, oh, there's nothing to see.
Yeah, I'm saying, what are interest rates going to do? Are they going to drop property rates and charges? Are they going to drop electricity prices? Are they going to drop oil prices? These are things that are not going up because, oh, there's suddenly mass demand for these products. We're seeing with the retail trade figures, which again, everyone's going, oh, it went up 0.9%. I'm like, the actual volume of things that people are buying in the shops have been falling for a year. We'll find out on Friday. So by the time this comes out, but it likely the volume of spending will at best be flat. This is not an economy where people are spending mad and driving prices up. There are things that are happening overseas and in sort of the supply side of things which are driving prices. And you know, you think about the mortgage, the cost of the mortgage, it's gone up 114% since they started going it on. Is a household's going, oh, yeah, we haven't hurt just enough yet, and if you give us another interest rate rise, that'll slow the economy. I think it's just showboating, to be honest.
It's well, <he's... laughs> just to be clear, that slight bang you heard in the middle of Greg's thoughts there was Greg dropping something. It was not Shane fainting. I just wanted
look, to... I just want to sort of, you know, look, I realise I am very much in the minority. And to be honest, I expect they will raise rates, although I think it's still only about a 50-50 chance. But, you know, they'll probably do
it. Don't sue us, Alan. And I'm not, I think you may actually listen to the podcast periodically. Hello, Alan. Alan Kohler, it's lovely to see you. I think I saw him making a sort of off-Broadway prediction that they wouldn't somewhere. Maybe I made this up. Anyway.
I know, I think Ross...
Ross Gittins, Ross we're Gittins talking was, about, the doyen of economic Ross journalism Gittins. In this
indeed.
Country.
I think he was sort of with me. And
yeah, but he was also conceding that they will.
Oh, yeah.
And he's making the case why they shouldn't. But
yeah, I'm in that category at all. I'm certainly... Not saying that.
Where would you have stopped with interest rates?
Oh, probably. Where were they in March?
Let's see. They went twice after that. I mean, so they're either three, three, five, or three and a half.
Yeah, I reckon around there. I mean, one of the problems with it is you had the US still going, and so you kind of had to follow along a little bit just to ensure the dollar didn't go to 50 cents.
Because that would be, for our listeners, if the dollar falls to 50 cents, your petrol bows
go up even higher.
Well, you would be looking at $2.50 a litre. Yeah.
So they do have to worry about that, although the Fed does look like they...
They're on hold now.
They're on hold
for a while.
So I'm not sure why... Yeah, look, I don't know what they think they are going to be calming down. I mean, service prices, yes, are going up, but again, you look at a lot of those service prices, they are things that are not, we're not talking just, you know, going to the gym and all hairdressing and
but it is broad-based across services, and that's one of the... The bank has been consistently complaining
but
that services inflation
wages
is high.
Are not going up as fast as they have been in the past with respect to service prices. So it's a case of, you know, we've always been told, and the Reserve Bank was always strong on this, that they're mostly worried about wages because wages are what growing. We've got wages maybe 3.8% now, I think.
It'll probably tip up. Let's say the wage price index is out the week after the Reserve Bank board meeting, and you can see it probably getting, because it'll take in the minimum wage increase.
Yeah.
So you can see it getting to 4, but 4%, that's what wages were growing at in 2012.
That's what they should be growing at.
Well, they need to, because ultimately, I don't think we come to an end to a lot of the pressures in the economy, cost of living, until real wages are growing again. And we have gone through... the best part of 3 years now without real, 2.5 years without real wage growth.
Yeah, we're about, I mean, they've gone down about 6% or something.
Yeah. That is hurting. That is absolutely
hurting. And so it's a case of when, and, you know, Shane was talking before about, you know, what is it, about $1,400 extra.
Mm.
Let's say that let's say you started with 6,000, you take out that 1,400. What's left over is actually worth less than it was back when you weren't having to pay that extra 1,400 because of it. So it is a real case of you've got real declining incomes, and I'm still yet to be convinced that another interest rate hike is going to actually affect much, given and the main reason is that the price rises are doing what interest rates do. The price rises that have mostly increased have been really in the non-discretionary items, the things you can't avoid paying. They've been the real drivers of inflation. This is something Stephen Kennedy, the Secretary of the Treasury, made in his a point he made when he was appearing at Senate Estimates. He says one of the problems with that is things like oil prices that lead to petrol prices increases and other increases of discretionary items slows the economy because you got to pay those things. You can't then go and spend on the more discretionary items that, especially the services that employ people that power the economy. Now, that's why the Reserve Bank raises interest rates, is to stop you from being able to spend money on other things.
Yeah.
Well, you know, good old OPEC are basically helping the Reserve Bank do that. They're making the inflation sort of look higher, but they're reducing that Go
back in time to 2007 when oil was $150 a barrel and inflation was well above target, and that's when the Reserve Bank had interest rates. They took them to 7.1. This argument that, yes, higher oil prices ultimately are somehow deflationary.
Yeah, but back then we had stronger income growth. We had stronger wage growth.
But oil was a bigger part of the overall economy then. Like, our dependence on oil has actually come down slightly since then. But this is this argument about, right, these other things like oil will slow the economy. But I think, and this goes back to what we did through COVID, say JobKeeper, $88 billion, the $35 billion that went out to businesses, the $300 billion that the Reserve Bank created and which was funneled through the banks out into the community, that money has been sloshing around. Like, there was a news.com actually had a good story this week about the fact that we've just seen a record amount of money pumped into superannuation. Mm-hmm. Now, the money has not come out of nowhere. It's been sitting in people's pockets. So there is still a lot of cash floating around the economy. And I think I don't think you can ignore that that's still there. We have not seen any, like, the default rates on housing, given what's gone on, they're lower than average. There hasn't been any move in that space.
Yeah.
For instance, yes, there are those people who are, and I'm not dismissing this, there are people right on the edge.
Yeah.
Who are really hurting. But ultimately, the Reserve Bank cannot deal with a slither of people. That's its job, is to look at the aggregate, and that's where they have to make that call. Will a quarter percentage point increase? Will it stop inflation growing any further? Maybe, maybe not. Will it end the economy? I think that's a much harder argument to make as well, saying one more quarter percent means, right, it's cats and dogs living together on the streets. I don't think it is either.
No, I don't think it's that. I just think it's unnecessary. And I just wonder why is a Reserve Bank that, as Michelle Bullock stated in her testimony, they've only got one tool.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is when you've only got one thing, you kind of are biased to use it. And that's why I think they will raise rates.
You're not happy about it.
Well, no, I guess my view is if I were the Reserve Bank, I would wait at least to see what the wages data is. Is there any real cost from waiting another month to December?
You could mount that argument. But I still don't think you're ever going to end up on the Reserve Bank board. I've got doubts.
I unfortunately gave up that hope
some time ago.
Some time ago when I was a little boy, I did write down one day I could be on the Reserve Bank board.
But
you were the only boy who ever did that.
Well, I reckon there might be a couple more boys somewhere out there. But anyway. So we've done that even more comprehensively than I thought that we would. And there were a couple of other things I wanted to put to you both. But I think I'm going to just go straight through actually to the end point that I'd planned in this conversation. And given all roads sort of lead there. Now, it's sort of like...
Where's she leading us?
Oh, my God, the suspense.
boys, wait, it's coming. So it's sort of the simple version of this question is the government doing enough to...
Right.
So that's the simple version. But I want us to sort of to touch the simple version. And then I want us to drill down slightly more because a question I want to put to you both, because it's just been a bit of a time between drinks, which is helpful in this sense. We've all had time to watch the current government a bit longer and to get a sense of what we think they are and what they're about in terms of both management of the economy but also reshaping the economy. So let's start with that. And let's keep the simple question tight. Is the government doing enough to manage these inflationary pressures in the economy, Shane?
Well, I suppose they could impose an income tax surcharge of 10%, and there would be revolution on the streets and that sort of thing. It's like if you're looking at a purely fiscal play to reduce demand and take pressure off the Reserve Bank, that's what you would do. They are not going to do that.
Yeah.
So on the other side, it's right. So what are they doing? They've run a budget surplus.
Yep.
And you go, right, instead of pumping $4 or $5 billion into the economy, they have withdrawn $22 billion, which is the first budget surplus since 2007-08.
Yeah.
So that's the right thing. They're tinkering with certain prices, and we saw that in inflation figures, like, say, the childcare.
Yes, of course.
Childcare policy actually, inflation would have been substantially higher if not for that policy.
Yeah.
Same with electricity.
And those sorts of things. So they're doing what they can. Ultimately, like, again, in aggregates, they keep the budgets in surplus. They're collecting more tax than they're pumping out. So that's a positive.
Yeah.
But the longer game is for how you make the economy more productive, better to run without inflationary pressures.
Yes. So that's the segue to the bigger picture.
One of the criticisms is about migration.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for migration, I think the economy would be slower, but I think inflation would be higher because you just don't. Like, even you go back 12 months ago to one of our last pods where we talked about all the cafes in inner city Sydney and Melbourne, no staff, couldn't open the door, pushing up prices.
Yes.
Because you've got the international students come back in.
Yeah.
Those help wanted signs or can't be open because haven't got staff have disappeared.
Yeah.
So that's another advantage that we've seen.
Yep. Yeah, okay. Yep. And so on the reform, because I think that's beautifully summarised, unless there's you want to add, look, Greg.
As you can say, there are things any government could do, but in reality, it's not a command economy.
Yes.
and they're right. They're not blowing. There's no cash splashing going around or anything. They're managing the budget as you would expect a budget to be managed, as you'd hope.
Fiscal and monetary policy are in alignment.
What might happen July 1st next year?
Yes,
that's a different thing.
That's another question to come.
You know, for now, I don't think the claims that have been, certainly you saw it during Senate estimates, the attempts by the opposition to get the head of the Reserve Bank or even Treasury to suggest, that the budget is inflationary. It's a bit tough to argue when it actually is in surplus.
Isn't.
Yes.
Okay.
It's taking money out.
And the reform piece, guys, what do we think about that?
You go, Greg, first, because I've got some thoughts.
Look, they haven't been overly reformist, but there have been some under the radar, perhaps for most listeners, but certainly not in the labour movement in the business community. There have been some things that they have been pushing, such as the closing the loopholes legislation, which has been fought over very fiercely at the moment, which I actually think is actually quite reformist. I think it's certainly in a sense that it's doing more than we saw under the Rudd and Gillard governments on the industrial relations front, where they kind of wiped away the work choices title, but really didn't fundamentally change it. And certainly I know the union movement was very much awake to that's what happened last time. We don't want it to happen this time. So there certainly was pressure, and the Labor and people within the Labor Party didn't want to go through that again. So I think that type of thing is good. Climate change, I continue to kind of despair at the lack of ambition that really is there. There's a lot of talk, but, come on. Time is running out. There was a fairly sobering study this week that came out from a journal associated with Nature that found that the world's sort of carbon budgets that we'd all been relying on were a little bit overestimating how much we had left.
There's been a budget cut.
A budget cut, and basically net zero by about 2032, 33, if you want to stand at 2 degrees, is what we need. Not 2050.
Yeah.
So it would be nice to see some, but coal mines keep getting open. So I'm of course, not all that happy about that. And if we're going to talk about reforms that they could do, and to give a plug to the Australian Institute's Revenue Summit that we had last week, the big one is you got Stage 3 sitting right in front of you. Reform that. And I'm not saying dump it. I'm saying reform it. Make it actually in a way that's less inflationary for a start, because it's a hell of a lot of money.
that's going to be going out the door to people who have are the people who probably have those bigger saving buffers than that Shane was talking about before.
Because, they have the bigger mortgages too.
Yeah, but, you know.
No sympathy for them, he says.
You know, the Reserve Bank has pointed out that those savings are very unequal. And we know that the low to middle income earners are the ones who have probably eaten into their savings most, but they're not the ones who are really going to be doing the best out of stage three. So there's something they could do if they wanted to reform. So it's not a case of I want to be all negative and say, oh, no, they're a do-nothing government. I think they are doing things, and certainly on labour, on industrial relations, I sort of applauded what they're doing. And at least for the first time in a decade, we actually have a government who said, you know, wage rises are good, especially for low-income people. But I'm sure Shane's got a few more sort of things there.
I'm curious. You know. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I'm going to the broader economic infrastructure. So we will see the legislation to start the overhaul of the Reserve Bank in the next 3 weeks.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
They're the most important economic institution in the country that has not changed effectively since 1990.
Yep.
So that's getting underway.
Yep.
This week we saw Jim Chalmers announce effectively the change in direction of the Productivity Commission.
Yes.
With a statement of expectations, with a heavy focus on dealing with climate change and the transition that the entire country needs. We can't. I have to push back about the suggestions, especially out of the Greens, about, right, we need to end gas today, we need to end coal today. The Australian economy falls over. There are millions of people's livelihoods affected by that. The art of politics is being able to make change but bring the public
They're not going to fall over if there aren't new ones.
No, there aren't new ones.
That's the point.
But there are some who say, let's stop gas now. And you know that those people are out there, particularly in Green's world.
Yes,
and you
go, but we've got a government that can't even say we won't even stop opening new thermal coal mines, I think we're... Yeah. But we've got to be a bit careful on who's actually been the extremists here.
There are, but there's also the absolute...
Yeah,
not worried
but
about.
But there's no those chance of that affected. Actually occurring in this government.
Well,
there isn't.
Yes, sorry, finish your point, Shane, and because I think I can square that circle.
Yeah, but you're into the PC reform that is also underway. So those two big chunky pieces of economic infrastructure are underway. You've had the employment white paper, which has come out since.
Yes, actually, I should have mentioned that.
And the Women's Economic Equality Task Force, which I'm actually writing about right now, saying we've actually put women and how they are affected by the economy and the failures that that is costing us. It's like $128 billion a year.
Yep.
That's on the agenda. There is policy being put together. I think that, particularly on the progressive side of politics, it's we want change now. Like there's this whole, how great was Gough? Gough was out inside 3 years.
There's a lot of pent-up demand.
There is pent-up demand. You can understand that because, especially after the Rudd-Gillard-Rudd debacle, where hopes were high and that government ran into the global financial crisis and then ran into Rudd and then Gillard and everything else.
And failure in Copenhagen.
And progressives have seen Abbott and Turnbull, and even on the progressive side, there was the hope around Turnbull.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it disappointed them. And then Morrison and everything else that's come through it.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So you understand why people are impatient.
Absolutely understand. But you've got to look, and I think part of it's also about the media cycle, social media demanding we want change now.
Well,
and you can't, like...
I think also, you're right as well. I mean, things like the wellbeing budget framework, which I have a few issues with the things use, but
it's a start.
I think there is certainly an attempt to lay a foundation, which is smart, because you don't want to spring things on them that have come from nowhere. I think you're quite right. When I read about the Productivity Commission statement of expectations, which we haven't had since what?
Ever.
Ever?
No, never.
And given we're up to the 25th year of it, it's probably about time.
Yes.
It will be interesting to see how that is framed in terms of the transition, because if it's sort of how we're going to transition along the government's pathway, that's kind of,
yeah,
who cares? But if it's actually... look at what the science says, and then you come back, then you've got a very powerful body
Square these circles, right? Because we're
running out of time.
We're running out of time, unfortunately. No. Well, I can't tell you how much I'm enjoying having the band back together. So thank you. It's been a really, really good conversation.
We've been talking about that.
I know, it's bizarre. Like,
I blame you.
Yeah, sorry, I really came off the log rod there.
No. It's good. And passion. We need passion, and there's plenty of it. And so thank you both for it, and as well as, you know, many, many facts to put before the listeners. But no, I'll just square this circle, I hope, quickly, just with an observation. Greg's obviously right on what the science tells us and how quickly we need to move in terms of, the sort of trying to hold out the worst case scenario associated with runaway global heating. None of us wants to think about that worst case scenario, but we have to because it's real and it's present. Shane's right. The problem with moving too fast in relation to this area is obviously history. We had a very interesting Guardian Essential poll at the start of the week, which delved into the transition and community attitudes to the transition. Regular listeners may have listened to Peter Lewis and my conversation about that this week, and Peter's thoughts about how you build a constituency for these big changes that are coming very fast. I think that's the key to it all, basically, is sort of building that ground for reform. But the difficulty is, and Greg's right to be frustrated, is that we've wasted all this bloody time. And trying to build a constituency for reform is almost a luxury the country doesn't have. But yet,
this is the failure of the past 10 years.
It is the failure of
it's
the past 10 years.
Not dealing with big issues.
Yeah, and it's
not just
that.
Climate.
But then also, I'll just say, the government, it's not out on its own this time. One of the things that I, certainly from our sort of point of view of frustration, is it's been a fair while since the Biden government did their Inflation Reduction Act, which was a massive spend, and we're still waiting for the response. We're still hearing whispers that something's coming, and I was sort of thinking now's about a good time to do it because it once again, or this is happening all around the world, every government's gone, oh, shit. Mm. America's kind of serious, or at least they're changing the conversation. We better respond, or everyone's going to go to America for their manufacturing of solar power and things like that. Time's kind of a wasting, and I think if you want to change if you want to get down the terrible politics, if you're a government that wants to sort of capture the momentum that might have been lost after the Voice. You got to.
No, I see.
You got to come up with something.
No, I agree. You know? But you also want to make sure it works
and make sure
it's right. And
I think.
Yeah, but like, it's not like it came out a month ago.
No. But I can read through a large number of ANAO reports about bad policy formulation.
Yeah.
And this got there are people inside. Jim Chalmers was there in Wayne Swan's office and could see for instance, the insulation program.
Yes.
When you get something wrong.
When you get it wrong.
It kills you politically.
But these are not things that have not been unknown or needed for 10 years.
But then again, even the Biden plan.
Are we just starting now?
The inflation reduction plan. Mm. There weren't people saying, oh, hell, this is going to take – this is gonna sucking in $1 trillion.
Yeah.
Like $1 trillion to the U.S. budget. They can afford that. So this is the discussion,
Well,
we would be talking about they're 10 times the size of Australian economy, the US economy, 10 to 15 times. So you are looking at something like $70 to $100 billion.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's over. That's not in 1 year we're talking.
No, but you were talking in a short period of time.
Yeah, we're talking basically, we've sort of done some estimates and it'd be anywhere up to about $13 billion a year, which... Massive, definitely.
Yes, it is.
The stage three tax cuts are going to cost $21 billion in their first year, so let's have a bit of a sense of proportion. We can afford some things.
You can afford it, but can you build it? Like if you went under this...
You ain't going to build it if we're just sitting around There is a debate there to be had, I don't think it's...
And I want to come back to one of the people who are missing is the opposition.
Yes.
Yeah.
They
yes.
like it's a, just, like it yeah. is a just more dinner foolishness. It's a dinner plate after my dog's licked it. There's nothing
no,
there.
No, exactly.
And you're
except,
going
except more particularly yeah. on this area, except more foolishness, sadly. And yeah. anyway, speaking yeah. of foolishness, we have attempted to avoid it over the last 30 minutes or so, but we haven't always it? Succeeded. And to sort of, yeah, on that last dialogue, which I think is really important and really fundamental, I think weirdly we're all right, so go figure. You know who is always right? The listeners to this podcast, who yep. we hear from joyfully and gleefully every time we do these episodes, and we're so delighted to hear from you and to know that you enjoy these sessions. Thank you to my two guests, who are my very dear friends and also, you know, fantastic minds on this stuff. Thank you for your time. Thank you to Miles Martignoni, who is the EP of this show,
and we'll be back with you next week.